This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Look, it's tough to write a memoir about being an American in Paris, because honestly, what is there left to say? Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Gertrude Stein have all written about it. If that's not enough, David Sedaris and Adam Gopnik have published relatively recent accounts. And yet, it isn't quite enough. Paris, for whatever reason, continues to have a hold on the popular imagination. And the fantasy is quite different from the reality of Paris today. A globalized Paris. Paris in the age of the internet and the euro. The jump between the mythical Paris and the actual city can be quite jarring. There's even a psychological disorder called Paris syndrome that's brought on by the disappointment that tourists feel when Paris doesn't live up to their fantasies. Rosecrans Baldwin made that the subject of his account of his time in Paris. Rosecrans Baldwin is a writer based in Chapel Hill. He'll be teaching at Duke's Center for Documentary Studies this summer. His new book is called Paris, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down. Rosecrans, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Talk a little bit about, first, before we talk about the book, America's obsession with France.
It's gone on for a long time. You can go back to John Adams and the XYZ affair. You can bring it up to speed, in the 60s. And you've got these beautiful French women showing up in the movies. And, we might have problems with de Gaulle politically, but, Brigitte Bardot, well, she passes muster. So even today, Paris remains the number one most visited city in the world in terms of tourism. And the Gallup poll this year in January, did a poll of Americans. And we are at an all-time high for recently. 75% of Americans think favorably of France. And that's up from like 2003, which was terrible.
It waxes and wanes, I was going to say, because there are times when, we sort of obsessively don't like the French.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 2003, you had Freedom Fries. Yeah. You had John Kerry getting in trouble for knowing how to speak French.
That's right. Any sign of intelligence sometimes on the political is a death mark. What about the other way around? How do the French feel about us, do you think?
The French people that I got to know when I was living there, none of them looked at me and started making George Bush jokes. None of them, chalked me up for being, uncultured or illiterate because I'm American. They love Americans still. And so I got a very good reception. They think Barack Obama is a unicorn. I mean, the idea that someone with his backstory could be elected president in a country that they associate with racism and with racial divisions. In France, it couldn't happen because they had these very elite systems for promoting their politicians. So the fact that we did it, like him or not, the French are blown away.
So what brought you there?
So my wife and I had been living in New York for about 7 years. We'd gotten tired of living in big cities, but we wanted more than anything to move abroad. And an opportunity fell on my lap. I'd worked my first job in New York was as a copy editor at a graphic design agency. And there was an art director there from Paris who had gone back to France, and then said later on, 2007, that he was looking for someone to come over and write for his advertising agency that he was now running, but they needed to speak a little bit of French so they could get by in meetings, but produce work in English. And I went over there, did the job interview. It went really well for some reason, even though my French was horrible. And then, spring of 2007, we ended up moving to Paris and living there for about 18 months.
Did they actually let you talk the bad French? Because usually they just shut you down pretty fast.
No. They were happy to have me speak the bad French. And I also felt it was my obligation. I went in, and most French people speak enough English. They take it in high school or something. But I thought, this is my responsibility to speak their language. I'm in their city, doing their thing. And I think they would have been happier if I would just quit it and be like, Mr. Rosecrans, please just speak the English. This is much better.
Well, the reputation is that they'll just snap a baguette over your head when you start to make you stop. So, but now you found out one of the interesting things is how hard you work and how many hours. This is the first myth that was shattered for me, because I figured the French, they work, 2 hours a day, get 6 months off. That's the deal. No, not for you.
No, the people that I worked with, I thought New York hours were bad. Paris, I was required to be in the office at, let's say 9:30, and people would stay until 7:30, 8:30, 9. And these are people with families at home. But the office culture was really a family culture. They all considered their colleagues, on that kind of level of relationship. And so people were happy to stay late. But I ended up working, typically Well, all day and then frequently on the weekends. And so I'm thinking, you know, banging my head against the desk, like, please be French already, you know, take some time off. So people got their 5 weeks of vacation and they took it. And they took their 1 hour of lunch every day. But otherwise, they work like dogs.
Did that surprise you when you got there?
Some things did. For example, the hour lunch. You know, I didn't expect people to take the full hour. And I was also very surprised. My office was on the Champs-Élysées. So this is the Fifth Avenue of Paris. Beautiful, historic. Mm-hmm. We just happened to be next door to a McDonald's. And my coworkers, and I'm thinking France hates McDonald's. Here's American imperialism at its worst. But the most popular lunch among my colleagues was McDonald's, and they'd bring it back to the office. So I'm looking at all these McDonald's bags coming in through the door, but they proceed to eat it in what I thought was a very French manner, which is to say, people sit down as a group. You sit down in like at a table of 10 people, and you start off with some French fries, or maybe some chicken McNuggets. And then you move on to have a burger, maybe two burgers, some fries. Then you have a salad, and then, you know, 40 minutes have gone by of conversation, and you've got this ice cream sundae sitting there having melted down to a pool of milk and chocolate, and that's the dessert. So it's the French mode of enjoying McDonald's.
It will be a four-course meal.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though, sans wine, I guess.
No, well, they serve beer in French McDonald's, which they don't in the States.
Oh, that would make things go better, I suppose. Do they call them French fries there? I just had enough.
They call them frites.
Frites, yeah. Pommes frites. So there you are. So that's one of the surprises. They don't hate McDonald's. Macho was something else that you've written and talked about,
right?
The French machismo.
Yeah, French, at least, again, I can only speak about the coworkers that I worked with. But the guys in my office, just there was this sort of Gallic, Mediterranean kind of, you know, macho, but also easily wounded at the same time. Mm. So, I mean, it went along with the workplace culture. For example, you know, I arrived on my first day and you look around and everyone, when they walk into the office in the morning, goes up and goes to other people sitting in the office and kisses them, you know, once on each cheek. And then you go on to the next person and do the same thing. And so I'm thinking, how in heck do you know whom to kiss? Because sometimes it's okay to kiss your boss. Sometimes it's not. So I, you know, for a couple weeks there, if there was an IT worker coming to fix my laptop, I was like, oh, hello, you know, and I kiss him twice on each cheek and he's backing away with this really weird look of disgust. You know, if a freelance, you know, employee comes up near me, I'm rushing in for the big smooch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only time you kiss the IT worker is actually when they fix the computer. That's my
right.
rule.
Right. And you save it for afterward.
Yeah. Which is to say I've never kissed an IT worker, but then, here come the emails. So, but it's okay. My email's down.
Oh, yeah.
So it doesn't matter. It matters too much about the complaints. So were you disappointed? I mean, ultimately, is there a way to put it? Did you have, right. What were your expectations going in? Did you have a romantic kind of mystical
oh, yeah.
view of Paris?
Yeah, I had the same. If anyone has a romantic idea about Paris, that's the idea that I had. I'd seen the movies. I mean, that's why the title, Paris, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down, you know, it comes off a little bit cynical, a little bit down. That's only because I went over there with every romantic notion about it. And found, well, a lot of those were still true, but there's also just tons of stuff about 21st century life that sort of smacks you in the face. And so all the notions were there, but just there was more to it. I think I wasn't disappointed by it, but with my hours and with the work I was doing, I joked to a friend. He was from the New York Times. He'd come over to Paris. He invited us out to this really fancy party during Fashion Week at the Grand Palais. So beautiful, ancient Paris, all these, you know, skinny, beautiful models walking around. And I'm just sitting there whining about my job. I'm being a total jerk. I'm thinking about like, oh, I had to work on Sunday and it was 10 o'clock at night. And he turned to me and he's like, you know, if you're sick of your job, just call me. I'll take it. Because I had joked, I feel like I'm working in Minneapolis. You know, I live in Paris, but I don't have the time to enjoy it. And so when my wife and I did get time to enjoy Paris and get out of the office and go see the city, then it was a blast.
Did you find that yours was a typical work experience, or was it just because you're in the ad industry?
You know, I talked to other expats working over there. I think everyone had similar surprises in store. And whether that's, you know, kissing people awkwardly, or, for example, when you're talking to your colleagues in the office, there's, let's just say, a lot more sexual interplay in the exchange. You know, and if you're in a meeting or if you're just in the hallway running across a colleague, it's just part of the water in office life and in France in general. There's sort of you can get away with a lot more in conversation. I was in a meeting one time and a client had come in, a tall, attractive woman from a fashion agency. She left the meeting, and the rest of our team is sitting around in the conference room. And this female product manager turns to me. She's like, okay, well, Rosecrans, what did you think? And I'm saying, oh, well, I think the account's going to be great. I think it's a good job. She said, no, 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 about her, about the client. Did you like her handbag? And then they proceed to, like, tear her down. Not tear her down, but evaluate her on the shape of her body and the make and year of her handbag. And I was just, oh. You know, stop being so French.
I can't do this. You're seeing the lawsuit.
It's the same time, fully loving it. Yeah, because it's a different culture and it's wonderful.
Well, that really raises the question, and you may not have had a chance to track this particular difference, but a city like Paris is an international city and always has been. But in a globalized age, the distance that Paris can put between itself and the rest of France could be kind of amazing. I mean, is Paris at the risk of becoming not very French anymore?
I think it's at the risk of not becoming very French anymore, but also at the risk of not becoming very contemporary anymore. I mean, the thing that Parisians are scared about is that the city is going to become really conservative and turn just into a theme park and not be like Berlin or New York or London and these places that continue to reinvent themselves. I think people in Paris are really worried about that.
So there's pressure on Paris to stay Paris.
That's exactly right.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
And not turn into Venice, which they all look at Venice and think, this is where, you know, rich Germans go to buy their retirement homes and all the Italians live on the mainland.
Because what made Paris interesting in the first place was how modern it was.
Right.
A couple of centuries
ago. And people flocking there. Right. And that was something that I ran into trouble with because I had notions in my mind as a writer that I'm going over there. And I would get up every morning and I would work on my novel, You Lost Me There, before going to the office, and I would run into other expats at parties. But these are not the lost generation, Hemingway, Fitzgerald. This was a trust fund kid from Seattle who, you know, had just all this money and was just thought of himself as the next Proust, and he wouldn't speak English with other Americans. He would only speak French, but with a Seattle accent. And you're like, you know, dude, just get over it.
Get over it.
But, you know, there's also like funny things like the frozen food in Paris right now is really good. I mean, the restaurants in Paris are great too. But these days, in terms of globalization, you've got a lot of families where both partners work. So you don't have the housewife able to go out to the market and, you know, buy some leeks and bring them home. So there's a chain of stores in Paris called Picard. You walk into the store, it's all freezers. You lift up the freezer, you pull out what you'd think would be a Stouffer's meal, but it's stewed rabbit with morels and prunes, or it's, you know, lobster bisque, you know, and it's for €4.50. And so all these people were telling us that, yeah, these days the home cook in Paris is one who reheats, but the food happens to be terrific.
The food is great. Well, that raises the questions too. Question two about French restaurants. Another great thing about cosmopolitan cities is they've got restaurants from all over the world. So you go there and so how's the Thai in Paris?
I didn't sampled too much Thai, but I'm a Mexican food aficionado, and I think I tried every Mexican food restaurant in Paris, and they were terrible. I mean, so because there's not a lot of Mexicans living in Paris. It's not a country within near proximity. So when you're having, let's say, a taco plate, it's going to come out with, instead of tortilla, you're going to have crepes. Instead of sour cream, you have creme fraiche. Instead of, you know, black beans, they have great northern white beans that have been stewed with rosemary. And so you have the French approximation. Right. I mean, they still had tequila, so that was, you know.
Right. But so that does – so it does seem like part of the culture is going to sort of remain pretty constant, that we can't really stand to take other people's cooking.
No, and I think if you go outside Paris, if you go to the south, if you go to the north, I would run into people. We went down to Provence for a weekend and met people who'd say, but you cannot talk to Parisians and expect to be able to see France. These people are cold. They do not like people. They are snobby. So it's like going anywhere in the States. And if you were to come to the United States and only go to New York City, people in the rest of the country are going to say, what are you doing?
Right.
You got to see the rest of the country. Those people are just too busy working.
You also you went around this country and visited various cities named Paris in the United States.
Yeah. So in January, I decided to write an article. I spent 2 weeks visiting towns called Paris in America. There happened to be about 25, give or take. So I went to Paris, Maine, Paris, Kentucky, lovely Paris, Texas, Paris, Idaho, and I spent about 7 hours awake in the Paris Casino and Resort in Las Vegas, which is basically a Disneyland version of every cliche that any American has ever thought about France. And so the whole point of it was I was asking people, what do you think about French people? And it was a survey. I had this little clipboard. I would pass around surveys and say, and I had a bunch of questions. And I just wanted to measure, well, what's the feelings about France these days in the States? So, for example, I asked people, please name one living French artist. That was it. Now, it could be an actor. It could be a movie director. It could be a musician, whomever. 78% of Americans couldn't name a single one.
Yeah. They couldn't even think of Jerry Lewis?
Right.
No.
It has to be a living one. That was the trouble. Gerard Depardieu, number one. Yeah. The novelist Michel Houellebecq, number two. And then around number four was Renoir, who happens mm-hmm. to be dead.
Been dead for a while.
Number five, I think, was Van Gogh, who has the double strike of being dead and Dutch. But I also found that people really like France. I mean, it was a very favorable feeling. I was in a cowboy bar in rural southern Idaho. I was being fed beer very quickly as the sort of cowboys fed themselves beer. And they loved talking to me because they were like, oh, well, I had thrown this theory out that the contemporary Idaho cowboy and the contemporary Parisian are very similar, both being sort of confrontational, defensive. They don't want the government in their business. And if you don't like who they are, well, they'll let you know. The cowboys thought this was terrific. They're like, oh, well, I guess we're highfalutin.
Did you have to tell them about the French?
They knew France from the movies, which is, I think, how most people know France. Right. It's from the movies, you know, and the things that are passed on.
So you talked about your novel that you wrote. You wrote that in Paris. Lost Me There.
Yeah.
Was it inspiring to be in Paris? And to write that book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could it not be? I mean, there's a sense you're walking around and all these people have come before you. When there's a gallery, an art gallery in our neighborhood, I walked past it one day and there were oil paintings hanging in the front window of American novelists. It was a gallery that only sold portraits of American novelists. I mean, books are just huge in Paris and in France. So, you know, there's T.C. Boyle and he's got like his, you know, emergency pull cord of hair, and Joyce Carol Oates looks like she's a famine victim. And it was just the sense of being like, oh, what am I even thinking, you know, trying this? But it was inspiring.
Did you talk to any Parisians who said they had been disappointed about a visit to the U.S.?
I talked to Parisians who were looking forward to a visit to the U.S. So, for example, and not in ways that I expected, I got the feeling that the Parisians I know, nothing could be finer than to visit the set of a David Lynch TV show, you know, like Twin Peaks or Badlands. Like, for example, there was this colleague, he asked me if I'd ever been to Detroit. I said, I've never been to Detroit. He said, well, he's planning a vacation for his wife and their two children, that they're going to go to Detroit for a week because he wants to go photograph the grit and the urban decay. And he's looking at me being like, do you not realize the treasures you have in your country? You have never been to Detroit? First, I had to translate Detroit, you know, and then I thought, no, I don't think about Detroit as my next vacation destination.
But, you know, that's not so crazy. I mean, we visit the ruins when we go to Greece and to, right?
right.
So that's it. So all of a sudden, we are now an ancient country with ruins.
Yeah. And our ruins are perhaps recent, but they are super romantic to the French.
All right. Was there any sort of huge disappointment, maybe the better feeling question is, what feeling did you leave with? Was it one of, say, disappointment or surprise? Or
if there was disappointment, is that I spent so much time living in Paris without the income to really live there. But no, I would go back tomorrow.
You could have gone to New York and had that experience.
I did that. That's why I came to Chapel Hill.
Rosecrans, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Rosecrans Baldwin is a writer living in Chapel Hill. Latest book called Paris, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down. It's going to be reading an excerpt at 11 a.m. Saturday at McIntyre's Fine Books in Pittsburgh. Later this summer, he's going to teach you a master class at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. It is open to anybody. Up next, the music of Diana Darby on The State of Things. Stay tuned.